This is the Shoot Once Podcast. I'm Frank Walker. Welcome back, everyone, to the Shoot Once Podcast here on the Hockey Podcast Network. Again, just reiterating how this goes, new shows on Monday and Thursday on the Hockey Podcast Network, and the new shows pop up Tuesday and Friday on the individual feed for the show, if that's how you like to listen. So I'd say it's been a decent week in Jackets land. Since we've talked with you last Wednesday, the Jackets are 1-1. Games, a loss against Anaheim, a win against the Carolina Hurricanes, which was really great because the Hurricanes have been kind of the darlings of the NHL right now. Because it's, and I don't have anything against people liking the Hurricanes. Good for them, and I get why people want to root for them, because it was a team that for so long there were the rumors about ownership and will they move and all that. And to see, little aside here, to see hockey go in a place that's not traditionally a hockey market, like in Carolina, they tailgate like it's a college football game. They have a hog on a spit outside and all that good stuff, and it's great. It's fun, and it is the kind of team that hockey media tends to fall in love with. If you haven't noticed, or if you don't listen to a lot of the kind of mainstream hockey media, and by that I mean NBC, TSN out of Canada, or Sportsnet out of Canada, what you'll notice, the teams, especially when a team kind of rises, that the analysts tend to fall in love with the most, as far as just kind of rooting for them, are those non-traditional markets. It's one of the reasons that Vegas got so much boost a couple of years back. Obviously, I mean, they were an expansion team that made a cup run, so I mean, that's an incredible story in and of itself. But then, like Carolina, the idea of you almost have like a college football experience going on with a hockey team, and then they do the, of course, obviously Don Cherry doesn't like him because he called the bunch of jerks thing, but just a little different. But it was a good win for the Blue Jackets. Anyway, getting back into kind of the flow of the show there. Starting off like we always do, looking at Dom's projections for the team as of today. It hasn't varied a lot since this started. He's got him at 89.1 right now, a 36% chance to make the playoffs. It is just hanging there, which is what the team is doing. They're just kind of hanging in there. I looked at the standings again today, and they're essentially useless because we're so early in the season and there's so much variance in how many games teams have played and all that. And the old rule, if you've heard hockey people say it, the old rule was, you know, where a team's at by Thanksgiving, that's about what you can expect them to make it. Statistically, it's much more if a team is either, you know, in or near a playoff spot, at Christmas is where you can, I think it's something like a 70 or 80% chance that those are the teams that make the playoffs, that sort of thing. So where the Blue Jackets are right now, we're 2-3. I'm feeling pretty good about it, especially with all the questions we had going into this year. Because looking at those first five games, Toronto, Pittsburgh, Buffalo, Anaheim, Carolina, if you'd told me, you know, before the season started, okay, you're going to start 2-3, I mean, obviously you'd want to be like, well, why not 3-2 or something like that, but I'll take 2-3, and it's setting up for an interesting next week. But going into where the games went this last week here for us, what really was encouraging. So even Friday night, the 2-1 loss to the Ducks, it was a game. I think I tweeted something after the game about this is a frustrating game for Blue Jackets fans. Expect to see a lot of these where things just felt kind of out of reach. And it was the kind of game that when you watched it the whole time, you're like, what's going on, guys? I mean, you're right there. You should win this game, and you didn't. And it really was a game where Anaheim's goalie, Ryan Miller, just stood on his head, made a bunch of saves. And the numbers kind of bear that out, because when we're looking at the advanced stats, and it's 5-on-5, the Corsi percentage went in the Blue Jackets' favor, 54%, which is, it's fine. I mean, it's not a huge big bump, but it says that they carried most of the play. The big things were the scoring chances. Now, in general, scoring chances for Anaheim outdid Columbus. Columbus had 18, Anaheim had 20. So it's pretty close, 47.3% chance for the Blue, or 47.37% more for the Blue Jackets. The big thing was the high danger chances, which Columbus had 8, Anaheim only had 3. So they had 72.73% of the high danger chances, which, as I discussed last week in a little bit of a tirade, there is a big push on, you know, what you're trying to do is weigh the chances and the opportunities as much to yourself as possible. And that's what they did in that game, which was, it was a frustrating game because it felt like a game they should have won. It's the kind of game that if you have a Josh Anderson lineup, maybe you end up pulling that one out. Maybe just one more shooter on there, or just one more dumb luck bounce. Because those happen. I mean, the goal they scored that night with Pierre-Luc Dubois shooting, it was just throw it at the net, bounced off the guy. And it was something that they mentioned during the broadcast. They mentioned this a little bit during the Hurricanes ones too, that the Blue Jackets, something we have noticed, something we've noticed quite a bit in these last couple games, they're taking a lot of shots that just never get on net and are just kind of off to the side. And it creates issues because for the very simple, obvious reason of if you take a shot, it should get on net. I mean, that's what you're looking for there. I mean, if you're taking a shot and it's not even getting to the net, it's you don't have a chance to score. I mean, maybe if it bounces funny or something, you don't have a chance. But they didn't even have. There were too many shots in the game against Anaheim where they just weren't even on target, and it showed in ways. The next night against Carolina, Jonas Korpisalo got the start again, played pretty well. This is a game that the Blue Jackets. It would have been more frustrating to lose this one because they just kind of ran this game. The Corsi 4 was a little higher, 54.76%. The difference here, scoring chances for 18 to 16. So they had 52.9% scoring chances. High danger chances, 8 to 4. So that's where we're starting to see a nice trend with this team. Are those scoring chances in a two-game sample, they got more high danger scoring chances. And it's something where over the 5 games so far this season, and these are all from Natural Stat Trick at 5-on-5, game 1 against the Maple Leafs, 6-4, 4 against. Game 2 against the Penguins, 8-4, 11 against. Game 3 against the Sabres, 4-4, 5 against. But then these last two games, 8-3 and 8-4. It's showing that the team is playing well. The team is starting to coalesce well around what's happening. And there's a couple of things we want to talk about in that vein, as far as players that I want to mention that I think are picking up a little bit of what we were hoping they could do. One is Ryan Murray. This is the guy. If you haven't been a Blue Jackets fan long, a few years back when he was drafted, the guy who was kind of the consensus number one overall pick was a guy named Nail Yakupov, who that was another year the Oilers got the number one pick and they took him. And the goofy saying that year, if you were trying to tank, was fail for Nail. And the Blue Jackets didn't, so they got the number two pick. They took Ryan Murray, a defenseman who had a lot of promise. And Ryan Murray's problem has just been injuries. The poor kid, I mean, from his first training camp in the league, has just been consistently having injury problems, just consistently getting hurt. This year so far, he's got 80 minutes as far as time on ice. I think that's third on the team at this point behind Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. No, probably fourth. I think it's fourth between Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, and David Savard there. But, I mean, when you're looking at what he's done this season, he's had 2 assists, 2 first assists, and 6 shots. Now, when you're talking about what that first assist means, if you're new to hockey, you're the last one to touch it before the guy who got it and scored. And in the Carolina game, that was one of the weirdest goals I ever watched, where he passed it to Marcus Nuttavaara, who was just right next to the net, and it pretty much just bounced off his stick and into the goal. It was the kind of shot, it was the reason it was so weird is you never see that. You never see a guy that open with nobody between him and the net. It was so weird, and he was right there. It was such a bizarre thing. And maybe part of it, too, is as a Blue Jackets fan, I've seen times where it looks like maybe it's close to that open, and the puck does something goofy and bounces off the stick wrong or something else. But it's really neat to see. We're starting to see Ryan Murray's potential come out a little bit. Because at this point, I mean, in the excitement level as far as Columbus defensemen, Ryan Murray's been third. And this year he's starting to play, starting to look like a defenseman that was a first, that, you know, that was a second overall pick. And it's really exciting. I mean, the thing is, if you're the Blue Jackets and you can keep Ryan Murray healthy and keep him going and have a healthy Seth and have Seth Jones rolling and have Zach Werenski rolling, you're going to be really good. I mean, even if the forwards in front of you aren't playing as good as they could be, those kinds of guys developing offense is really good. It's incredible what that does for a team. The next is Mr. Pierre-Luc Dubois, who at this point on the season has got 2 goals, 6 shots, and he is developing into that number one center that Columbus has wanted for years and always wanted. And even last year at times, he really looked it. Because number one center is really kind of one of those cornerstone pieces that if you don't have it, you're always looking for it. It's that kind of thing. And even last year when the Matt Duchene trade happened, there was a strong sense of, okay, so Duchene will be the second and Dubois will stay the first on the top line with Panarin and Atkinson. And so Pierre-Luc Dubois, I mean, he had 2 goals these last 2 nights. Two very different goals, but the kind of things you want to see a first-line center doing. The one against Anaheim was the weird off-the-bat goal that was just strange and you weren't expecting it, but those are the types of things you want. Okay, I'm in a weird opportunity here, down here in the corner. I'm just going to throw it at the net and see what happens. I mean, maybe one of my guys will get a rebound. Maybe nothing happens, but it's always a good thing. It is always a good thing if you can get the puck to the other team's net. And so it's a smart thing to do. Last night was just being a boss and being a number one center. The breakaway he had where he had somebody right there on his hip the whole time who looked like he was trying to avoid a penalty, but Dubois just... And it was cool. He just, you know, kind of went inside. The goalie went low, so Dubois kicked it up high and it went in. The thing I was really happy about was reading a quote afterwards that he discussed as they talked to him and they said, hey, walk us through that goal. When did you decide what you wanted to do? And he said, well, I was just going to take what he gave me, which is really good to hear. It's great to hear that the game's slowing down that much for Dubois, because with players, with shooters a lot, what you'll get when the game's moving too quick for them, or they're not calm, they don't feel put together, they'll have moves or shots they kind of rely on. They'll have certain tactics they like, and you really see this in the shootout, but I mean, a breakaway in a real game and the shootout are such different things, but this is one place where there's kind of a little bit of an overlap in that you'll see some players, if they get a breakaway, they'll always try and do something similar. They'll always try and do the same kind of move. Like, they'll either always try and go 5-hole, or they'll always try and go for a certain corner, or they'll just be like, oh, I'm on the breakaway. And it's this sense of getting so excited that you have the opportunity that you are rushing into something. I actually remember a few years back, there was an injury to Sidney Crosby. And he talked about, you know, he was sitting up in the press box. And when he came back from injury, they asked him, you know, oh, is there anything you learned sitting up in there in the press box? And the thing he said was that he was surprised by how much time he had, by how much time players seemed to have on the ice. And what he meant by that was, when you're down there on the ice and things are happening, you don't think things through as quickly. You're always rushing, thinking you're right on the verge of something going wrong, or having to make the decision, or having to make the play right away. And And it sounds like Dubois is getting to the point where the game is slowing down for him like that. So it's really exciting to see. It's a good step in the right direction. So to see the team get a big win against a good team like Carolina, something that I have been something, and there's one other player I wanted to talk about tonight a little bit, and I think this is the player that is the most lightning rod anymore for Columbus Blue Jackets fans. And it is the play of one Alexander Wennberg. Now, Wennberg has, I mean, he has two assists on the season, and they're both second assists. And he's taken three shots over five games. Now, for a guy that's a center, you don't want that. You want more shots. Now, that being said, more players could be taking more shots. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois, as much as we just gushed over him, he's got six shots in five games. You don't want that. You want that number into the 10 or 15 mark. I mean, at this point, most Blue Jackets players are not where you want them to be as far as shots. I mean, Boone Jenner's at 12, which is good. Zach Werenski is at 12, which is good. Kim Atkinson's at 16, which is really good. And these are all 5-on-5 numbers. I'm leaving it out there a little bit, but actually, let me grab the full all stats, all counting stats. No, I apologize. Alexander Wennberg, three assists, one first assist, two second assists, because he had that assist in the power play, I think, on I want to say in the Buffalo game. But he's got five shots on goal. Pierre-Luc Dubois got nine over five games. So yeah, I was sorry, looking at the wrong counting stats there. But so in all games, you want to see your real shooters be at 3 to 4 shots a game, that sort of thing, maybe 5 or 6, depending on how things are going. Nick Foligno's at 13, which is just a lot for him, but hey, I don't mind seeing it. Oh, Cam Atkinson's at 25, excuse me. He's at 25 shots with two goals. Okay, so Alexander Wennberg. All right, so let's walk through the Alexander Wennberg story here real quick before I give you my non-expert analysis on what I'm seeing currently. Alexander Wennberg, when he was drafted in Yarmo's first draft, where Yarmo had three picks. And there was this sense that Alexander Wennberg might be able to be that number one center that we'd been looking for. And then quickly it became kind of apparent that he was going to need some time to learn. And then there was this thought of, okay, well, maybe he's one of the more playmaking centers. He's not going to be a scoring center, but he's going to be more of a playmaker. And then he's had some down years. He signed a big RFA contract that kept him, that was, you know, a renewal for 6 years. But he's just never quite been up to his potential, or quite up to the expectation. Let me put it that way. The expectation of what there was for him. What I'm seeing over these last few games, because I know some people are out there definitively like, no, he is not a number two center. He's feeling more like one these last few games. And what I mean by that is, there were many games last season where you would go a whole week and not notice Alexander Wennberg doing something. Or if you did, it would be something that wasn't great or something like that. Whereas Alexander Wennberg's counting stats aren't real high. From what I'm watching and from what I'm seeing from him, he's doing a lot of work in driving possession. I think he's doing a lot of work in keeping offensive series going, keeping the puck in the zone, doing trying to keep the puck moving around. Now, is he shooting as much as I would want? No, he's not. He's not so far. But I think he's doing a lot to assist with the offensive growth. That's what I'd say at this point. I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing from him so far this season. Now, I understand that's not the best take. That's not the most popular take right now, but it's what I'm seeing. Now, that has the right to change any moment, because the one thing Alexander Wennberg has shown us is he's not always going to be reliable as a player. At least he has. This is what we've learned from him so far. Hopefully we're wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong about the whole him not being consistent. If he can consistently be a guy who is pushing play in the offensive zone, who's, you know, making passes, making things happen. Because, I mean, 3 assists over 5 games, that's good. You want goals. I mean, you obviously want goals. But I think if he can keep up, you know, I mean, right now he's at more than half a point per game. If that's what we get out of him as a second line center, if he can maintain a half point per game and finish the season at 41 points, that's not bad. I'll take it. Again, I mean, you're not, it's not like you're going to be, you know, all of a sudden you're going to be saying, Dubois Wenberg's up there with Crosby and Malkin or anything. I mean, we're not talking about that. I mean, it's the kind of thing where obviously you'd still want to see either an improvement in play or try and get an upgrade there. But it's not bad. And it's the kind of, if we can move into that kind of consistent role, he can be a good player on this team. We're seeing Oliver Bjorkstrand become what we thought he could be. I mean, the guy's got 2 goals. He's starting to shoot more. That wraparound, and it wasn't a wraparound shot, but that goal against Carolina last night was incredible on Saturday night, where he essentially had the puck below the net, circled back up, and just kind of outraced his guy to get an angle and just popped it in. The thing I'll remember about Bjorkstrand is when Bobrovsky was here, he talked about how Bjorkstrand had just a ridiculous shot, how his shot was so hard to defend because it didn't have a real windup. It doesn't look like other shots coming off the stick. It just kind of pops out of there. And so that's what I'm excited to see. I think we're seeing a lot of the young guys starting to play pretty well. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. A couple other observations, and I'm grabbing these from the Athletics recap of that game, and mostly from Allison Lukin's kind of insights on it, because there's some things here that are really cool. All right, let me, 1 second here, I was in the wrong section of this, but there was a, okay, so the Korpisalo's play against the Hurricanes was really good. He played well, but what helped him was the play in front of him, for the most part. The defense in front of him was great. One second here, folks. I'm just grabbing the... I can't even find the specifics anymore, but it was some crazy stat about in the whole third period, Korpisalo faced something like 11 shots, and the average shot was more than 60 feet from the net. I mean, it was the kind of thing where it's just, when the defense was playing that well in front of him, they did a good job just finishing the game, which was what I was really happy with. Yeah, here it was. The Hurricanes had 11 shots on goal in the third period from an average distance of 61 feet. I mean, it's just the kind of thing where I retweeted earlier that this week something about, you know, where the average shots were. And there was only a difference of maybe a foot between the team with the lowest and the team with the highest. But the Blue Jackets were in the bottom half of that as far as their average shot from net and how far it was. And that's another thing where you're playing those percentages. You're trying to get in closer because you're just going to get more likelihoods you actually hit the net, all that stuff. If you can keep a team to an average of a 61-foot distance when they shoot the puck, that's difficult. That is a hard thing to do. I mean, the whole rink's only 200 feet to begin with. So you're doing a great job wanting to keep that going. So this has been... For 2 and 3, things feel really good. And maybe some of that's a little bit of a high because you beat a team that was unbeaten before this game. And that tends to lead to overreaction. But at the same time, we're in that part of the season where overreaction still happens quite a bit because we're so early. Like before this game, I was listening to somebody talk about the league, and they were talking about the Metropolitan Division. They were like, well, before the season, I thought the Metro was Washington is kind of the clear cut number one, and then everybody else. They're like, well, now maybe that's Washington and Carolina than everybody else. Well, I mean, you're getting wrapped up in five games. Just because it's the beginning of the season, don't tell yourself a story making that a bigger deal than it is. But it's good to see that in the last two games, the Blue Jackets have really been kind of hitting that right stride, getting things going in the right direction. Last three, if you count the Buffalo game, I mean, they're, even though one in there was a loss, things are going in the right direction. But we have two negative things I do want to hit on. I guess they're not negative, but they're just question marks. Okay, if Corpusalo starts playing well, when do we see Elvis again? Because here's the reality of the situation. Although it would be a great problem to have if Corpusalo was just too good, we want, and then we didn't get a chance to see Elvis, we want to see what we have in Elvis. Because the thing we don't want is for Corpy to go on a hot streak and then for us to not use Elvis and know what we're going with and end up trading him or something goofy. We want to know what we have. I was thinking we'd see him sometime on this back-to-back, but I'm wondering if I'm wondering if it was something where Tortorella said, no, the team's playing well in front of Corpy. We're going to stick with that for now. There's another back-to-back next weekend. This Wednesday, they play Dallas at home. Then they go to Chicago on Friday. And then they're home Saturday against the New York Islanders. I wonder if you bring in Elvis on that Saturday game against the Islanders. It's a home game. The last time you started him against the Penguins. Do you really want to start him next time against Kane and DeBrincat and all those guys in Chicago? I wouldn't necessarily want to go there with it. So if it were me, I would start him on Saturday to see what we got and start playing things from there. And who knows, maybe it's something where the team starts playing well enough that the goalies, only have to do so well, kind of like with that game against Carolina. So that's one thing. The other, Josh Anderson was placed on the IR, and it was done retroactive to October 5th. Now, they're saying he's day-to-day, and they were saying that before then. But it's the kind of thing where you just... So here's my thoughts. Josh Anderson is a great player. I love Josh Anderson. I want him to be on this team and to be successful for a very long time. I'm starting to become concerned about injuries. And it's not that he's had like a major injury that's kept him out for a long period of time, but he's starting to get a lot of, seems like, little knick-knack injuries over time, where something gets banged up, something gets dinged up. And the big problem there is, when a player gets those, and you're a player who plays that big, heavy style like Josh Anderson does, how many more of these are we going to see? Is this going to be a problem throughout his career? That sort of thing. And I'm not saying that we need to throw up the red flag on this or that we need to be terrified of it. I'm wondering if it's starting to become a concern in the building. I'm wondering if when Jarmo's looking at long-term plans for this team and when they're looking at how to bring Josh back from injury, if they're starting to have those discussions of, okay, are we starting to see lingering things? Are we starting to see nagging things? Or is this just, hey, he plays a big, hard, heavy game, so if he's got, something that's a... if he's got something that's just kind of nagging him, let's give him some extra time, make sure he's on the mend correctly so that he can come back and be fine. I don't know. I'm interested to see where this goes. Hopefully he's back soon. Hopefully, as soon as the injured reserve time is done, he can just hop right back in and be ready to go. That's my hope for what we're going to see here. I don't know. It's just one of those things that I am concerned about going forward and how things are going to go. But we'll see. So going forward, guys, we got three games coming up this week. Dallas, Chicago, the Islanders. I'm excited. I am starting to feel like, okay, things are heading in the right direction. And we still don't have a great sense of where teams are at. But hopefully we do at the end of this week and going forward. So thank you guys very much for listening. and go Jackets.
This has been the Shoot Once podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Shoot Once Pod.